to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Sammy finds out about Will's betrayal on Days of Our Lives. Hope chooses Wyatt by default on The Bold and the Beautiful. Neil gets the shock of his life on The Young and the Restless. And everybody wants a three-way on General Hospital. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Welcome.
Hey.
It's nice to have you back. You've been gone for a while, and the podcast hasn't been the same without you.
Yes, I have been working on some other projects, but I brought back some friends so that when I am away, y'all won't be lonely.
And one of those friends is Sarah Babel, who recently covered the Emmys for us. Sarah, welcome back for your second visit.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. I think I've finally recovered from the daytime Emmys, so I'm ready to talk.
It took a month or two, right?
It was traumatic.
Traumatic. Well, one person who is never traumatic. That's a terrible segue. Mike, it has been so long. Welcome back to the podcast. I think As the World Turns and Guiding Light were still on the air. Welcome.
Yeah. If it was a good segue, Mike would know what podcast he was on.
Exactly. This,
Luke, some things never get better with age, and so do my segues. Welcome back, Mike.
No, they don't, but thank you.
Mike, we have 75 gay love stories to catch up on since we last left you. I mean, we have gone from Luke and Noah standing up, you know, bumping penises together and going to the closet.
Having pillow fights on the jumping on the bed, remember that?
Almost three way. So
and Olivia and Natalia too.
Were you not there to talk about all that? Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Listen, I don't think he's been on a podcast since Guiding Light went off the air.
Nope. As the World Turns, maybe.
So you missed Olivia eating the Hello Kitty.
Oh no, I did not miss that.
Well. Someone who is wanting to do some chowing down was Brad, Felix, and Lucas. And
there was no kitty in that room.
No, they wanted some puppy chow, not kitty.
No, you didn't. No puppy chow. Michael Jackson liked puppy chow. They wanted dog food. Oh. Well, Sarah,
they wanted big kibble, not little
Sarah,
kibble.
Sarah, this is our thought-provoking, sophisticated discussion of the daytime drama as an art form.
Well, and Jamie, as you brilliantly put out in this on this last week's ratings rants and raves, daytime needs camp, and who better to deliver that than us?
Hey, there you go.
So, what did you guys think of the potential three-way on General Hospital? Some people were clutching their pearls. Other people were happy for it. Sarah, what did you think?
I think it's about time that daytime started exploring sex again. When I was a little kid and started watching soaps, I was, you know, on a regular basis titillated with it. Now, it is just really tame, generally speaking. You know, we live in a world where you can see all sorts of stuff going on, not only on cable, but even on prime time, you see a lot more, you know, on, let's say, a show like Scandal or The Good Wife than you do on daytime. And I think it has hurt the genre, and I think it's about time it started pushing the envelope again. And I think the most interesting thing about the controversy is it seemed to be, at least online, a lot of it was between some gay men thinking that it was stereotypical that only the gay characters were contemplating having a threesome instead of the straight characters, which is kind of a, like, the fact that that was a debate is like, whoa, we've come a long way. But I thought it was funny, frankly, and, you know, I've assumed all along that they weren't actually going to go there just because it wouldn't have been in character for Felix, and because I don't think ABC standards and practices would have been like, oh yeah, let's go, you know, go on, let's make it, film it exactly like you would if it were a True Blood scene, because then they'd have gotten fined by the FCC. So I thought it was actually pretty progressive and fun.
Jamie, I was ecstatic because of the fact that Lucas chose Brad, and I can't stand Lucas and Felix together. What did you think of the three-way?
Well, I feel that what GH managed to accomplish this week is to tell a really heartfelt story about love under the guise of a titillating sex story, because there really wasn't a lot of sex. There was a lot of talk and innuendo. And at the end of the day, you know, the three-way became a very chaste two-way. But like Sarah said, I'm so glad that Daytime is doing this. Bill Bell tried to have Catherine Chancellor fall in love with a woman in the 70s and got pushback. But Daytime continued to push sexual boundaries through the generations. But we saw when they tried to launch the new All My Children and One Life to Live with just cuss words, with bullshit and things of that nature. Critics, fans, everyone, we didn't lose our minds over that. But, you know, the mainstream critics, the fan base just lost their minds about, you know, little Matthew Buchanan saying bullshit. Who cares? We say bullshit in our real lives. Every critic I know says bullshit in their real life. What is the big deal? I don't get why Daytime has to maintain this pearl-clutching mentality, because they're no longer just competing with the dreaded reality show or the more cost-effective talk show. They're competing with a bazillion serials on cable, in network primetime, on Netflix, Hulu, that are doing serialized storytelling, and they are saying bullshit, and they are having three ways. I mean, Orange is the New Black is a big old lesbian prison romp. I mean, you can't just keep on clutching pearls. And it drives me insane, the criticism that, I mean, gay is really the new black, because it used to be that if you told an urban, you know, kind of a thug story, thug romance story on a soap, there was criticism. You know, and I did quite a bit of that, because I was like, you know, I didn't grow up in the streets with, you know, wearing a leather jacket with the sleeves cut off. So I didn't identify with a lot of those portrayals of black people. But those stories, no, those stories would, I know, Mike, shocking, right? Those stories taught hell, you know. But then when, you know, and right. And then when Y&R kind of created more mainstream buppy black people, those stories caught criticism. I feel like we have that now with gay stories, because when Luke and Noah weren't allowed to have a sex scene, people lost their minds. Now it's because of a three-way, people lose their minds. It's like, can we take a moment to say brava that word even got to be used on GH? Now, I will say this, you know, a lot of times with gay stories, people want it to be the coming out, battling homophobia. But there is more to life than that. And I will say this about GH's gay characters. There might not be the best examples of character development and things of that nature, which are very important. I'm not poo-pooing that. I mean, I do wish GH would take a little more time to, you know, show us character development with these people. Because
we don't really know what's happened with Lucas,
right,
before
he tried. It'd be nice if we saw Milo pining for Epiphany for 3 or 4 weeks before he's brought back to say he loves her and then go away for 6 months. That does get old. I'm not going to lie. That does get old, and that is a valid critique. A lot of times these stories have to be slowed down, and they basically just have to pick and choose. Like, they have too many stories. That's the problem. They have, like, 75 arcs. And I do wish they would – wait, let me finish – that they would slow it down and streamline it. But I will say this. For this particular beat, though, I felt that it was a microcosm of a type of gay life that does exist that has not been explored. Everybody is not happily married – gays that battle evil sociopaths like Will and Sonny and, you know, impregnate Latina girls and have babies. You know, there are gay boys that like to have threesomes. There are straight boys that like to have threesomes. Straight girls like to have threesomes. Why? What is the big deal that they're just three fun gay boys and they want, you know, well, two of them are kinky. Felix is not really kinky. And at the end of the story, it showed that. You know, I enjoyed it. I do wish we would see, like with Milo and Epiphany, love that beat. I mean, oh my God, that's every fat person's dream, and I am a fat person. For some hot Italian to want you, it's like, hello, you go, Epiphany. But I want to see it on screen. I don't want to be all happy about that, and then at Christmas they're married. And I haven't seen them from now and Christmas.
And that has been one of the criticisms of General Hospital by a lot of fans, is that you'll go for long periods without seeing characters, and then all of a sudden they're back. Even though General Hospital has a lot of storylines going on, sometimes their attempt to balance them all doesn't.
And I don't mind that to some extent, because we see that a lot in cable and primetime. But it is kind of silly when we see 7 weeks ago Lucy is having the same conversation 7 weeks later with Scott. It's like, wait, no, that's not. I can't stay engaged in that particular triangle when I only see it every 7 weeks.
But yeah, and I think some of the problem, like, you know, in terms of, like, the behind-the-scenes inside baseball of it is, like, whether the actors playing the characters are signed to a long-term contract or recurring roles. Because if it's a long-term contract, let's just say, you know, they maybe have to be on at least 2 episodes a week. Like, that's guaranteed in their contract. Mm-hmm. If it's someone who's recurring, like Lynn Herring or I would, you know, assume, you know, Sonya Eddy, that's like they have to be like, okay, can we afford that this week? Can we do this? And it, unfortunately, it impacts the storytelling in a way that is frustrating to the audience.
I thought that Sonya Eddy went just recently on off contract on recurring. Is that right or wrong?
I believe she's recurring. I'm not sure. I would, if she's not recurring, then she needs a new agent. And I love Sonya Eddy, but I'm like, her guarantee, if she's on contract, her guarantee must be once every 3 weeks. And I don't think they write up contracts like that. So I'm assuming she's on recurring. I'm not sure.
And I also have to say that to me, Milo and Epiphany is a lot more groundbreaking in a lot of ways than the gay love triangle, which is, you know, three conventionally attractive guys who are the same age figuring out who's right for who. Because we are so accustomed on television to seeing, let's, for example, Ed O'Neill's married to Sofia Vergara on Modern Family. We don't even blink an eye about that.
Mm-mm.
King of Queens, Kevin James and Leah Remini back in the day. You didn't blink an eye about it. When it's reversed?
Jim Belushi. Remember Jim Belushi with Allison from
tried to block that out, but you know, it's just like, but meanwhile, when Roseanne had a show, she got John Goodman. When Melissa McCarthy gets a show, she gets, you know, another person who mirrors her. So this is so groundbreaking, and it made me think of, there is this episode of Louie, a show which gets nominated for Emmys, but nobody on Earth watches, like 100 times as many people watch General Hospital as Louie, that got all this hype that was called, like, Said the Fat Girl, which was in which Louie's character, played by Louis C.K., who is kind of a schlubby, chubby dude, you know, this plus-sized, very attractive woman, is interested in him, and he just can't go there, and we've seen his character sleep with these, like, supermodel-looking women, and you sort of can buy it because his character's supposed to be a comedian like him, so he's a little bit famous and funny, and then she makes this big speech about, like, how she can never get real love because she's a plus-size and no guy will ever give her a chance, and, you know, it got all this, oh, it's so progressive, but it basically came out to saying, like, dudes can get whoever they want no matter what they look like, but unless a woman looks like a size 2 and is 25 years old, she's just doomed. And I don't think that's true in real life. I think we all know people of all shapes and sizes who have found true love with each other. And it's just nice to see that reflected. I think the average GH viewer looks more like, or the average American, frankly, looks more like Sonya Eddy than like...
That's right.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, One Life to Live did do this with Marcy and Michael to an extent,
it's
because Marcy was
Michael
a plus
wasn't
size
any up Milo. There wasn't any magic. I saw.
That is all a matter of taste, my friend. Mike, what did you think of this development and how they tied it into Felix, getting his hopes up only to be dashed?
Felix, is that
like, I know.
That was fellatio and what kind of XX term is there? Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so not being completely familiar with the entire storyline, I do agree that it's good that it's put out there, because I feel like sexuality is a gray area and everybody has their own thing that makes them do what they want to do. But in the bigger picture of General Hospital, isn't it the end game between Brad and Lucas more than Felix?
I sure hope so, because I can't stand Felix with.
Yeah, because
that was Felix already. They decided that this week that Felix and Lucas are the couple.
But how long will that last when there's only three gay people in?
Well,
Port Charles?
I don't think it. I mean,
Felix is going to need to have someone else.
This isn't Bold and the Beautiful. Like with GH, there is a in my opinion, Sarah, you can speak to this. It always feels like there's, with Ron's writing, there is a definite, okay, this triangle has been decided. Like, I have no illusions that Olivia is still going to be pining for Sonny. It feels like Olivia is moving into Ned's orbit, and that's that. Carly is back in Sonny's orbit, and that's that. And I felt like from that episode that Felix decided, I'm not going to settle for being on the side of the bed while the hot Asian boy and the hot white boy go down on each other and push me off onto the floor. I got that feeling that he's like, I deserve better than that.
Yeah, and it's okay it's actually okay after all this came to pass that somebody just said, you know what, this isn't right for me. And because we've all done that. We've all gone to places where we thought this would be kind of fun to do, but when you take a second and think about it, it's not the right thing for me.
Decide afterwards. I'm one of those people that in retrospect you go, you know.
I think Felix is the oldest virgin in Port Charles. It hasn't really been established yet, although it was implied. And I think it's really funny to make, like, you know, Ron and his love of obscure GH history, that he's like, Felix is the new Anne Logan, you know, the adult virgin nurse, and that will eventually see him find a guy who hopefully shares his more conservative, old-fashioned values, and they can be, you know, Will and Sonny together, so.
Wow. Oh, God, let's not even talk about Will and Sonny. They are more boring than watching paint dry, but we will be discussing them later. Not that it will make a great podcast, but we will be discussing them later. Let's talk a little bit about the garish Aztec jewelry on General Hospital and Maxie's almost wedding. Sarah, what did you think about how that all fell out and how the Wombat decided to take everybody hostage?
Sarah told me to tell you she don't know who the wombat is. Luke is gonna make calling that boy a wombat a thing if it's the last thing he does.
And is anybody in this day and age aware of the Aztec princess unless they were watching?
Child, Ron, you know how for you, I mean, let me tell you.
That is some ugly
Mike,
ass.
Mike, you know,
coming to QVC soon.
Love the fact that they could tie in the past history, but I really have to, as much as I am all about that, I have to wonder about the person that has no idea what this is all about, because it was all about Felicia at the time, and nobody knows who Felicia is because she's not on anymore. So what difference does it make?
Well, she's on now. They've, you know, ever since.
Well, occasionally.
Ever since the 50th, they've fully reestablished her in town as a recurring player. But Mike, you remember in the old days of DC where we used to beg for Chiefs to revisit that stuff. Well, Ron has tried to revisit all of those stories, and he gets shit on worse than Guza for killing the Quartermains. People go on Twitter and they go, oh my God, you asshole. Felicia had a scepter, you son of a bitch. It's like, just go. You know, because people go, oh, Ron is so mean to them. No, no. I mean, yeah. Ron can
to be fair, he did kill a Quartermain and didn't even give him
a... killed a Quartermain that he brought back, for God's sake. But the thing of it is, he tries to revisit these stories that were not even revisited at all under the last two or three regimes. Mm-hmm. And child, if he gets something a little off, or if Felicia had a nose ring and a belly button ring and a you know, something that he wrote differently, he will get, you son of a bitch, you don't even know the history of this show. Why are you writing about the Aztec princess? I hope Montezuma's revenge is visited upon your house. I mean, that is crazy to me when soaps revisit stories all the time and don't keep it 100. The New Dallas, which I love to death, they totally rewrote Miss Ellie's will. Miss Ellie gave that damn ranch to Bobby when she was alive and well and left town with Clayton Farlow. It was not any type of this one gets the mineral rights and this one. Cynthia Cedree totally reimagined all that. But it's good storytelling, so we love it. But if Ron, if Felicia don't have a pinky ring that she had in 1987, he gonna have to get in a Twitter fight about it, child.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't even remember what pinky ring she was wearing.
I will say this. I was not watching GH at this time.
I wasn't either.
I was a wee lassie at the time that this was going on, or so we'll pretend. And
no, and I get it, because I'm not, you know, to be fair, I'm that way when something is wrong on Y&R. As I dog the person. The thing of it is, I don't tweet at the writer and say that type of stuff. I'll tweet on my own Twitter handle, but they will tweet at him. But I get it, because when, you know, when Stefano called Kate Katarina, I lost my mind. Because, you know, that was Carly's real name. But I get that impulse, but I've never gotten the impulse to tweet at the writer.
Well, let's face it. Some people just don't have social media.
You son of a bitch! You because you got that beat wrong, you asshole. You know?
I also think if I was like going to make a structural comment, then it sort of has the same thing to do with like Felix and Epiphany. Is like a lot of times GH will sacrifice the build for the surprise. So, you know, we had a sense that Levi was up to something, but there's no way you could have picked up, oh, I bet it's the jewels, because there was absolutely nothing that would have indicated that specific thing was his agenda. Like, people were like,
I feel like sometimes General Hospital, in this case, or maybe in other soaps, always do this, is where they feel like they're not getting the vibe or the push.
Chemistry?
They didn't like this guy Levi, so they got to get rid of him, and this is how we're going to do it really fast.
I'm just going to, because I know that this actor was originally brought on for the short term, and just because, well, this is going to sound really lame. A friend of mine was in an acting workshop with the guy who plays Levi.
Jamie, let her finish her inside story.
And she's like, wait, because she watched GH for the first time to see him, and she's like, wait, he was only on like 4 episodes, right? And I'm like, no, he's still on months later. And she was like, oh, really? So apparently everyone involved thought it was going to be, or at least my friend, who, not granted, is not like the super inside source, thought it was going to be a shorter, even shorter term role. And I think he was just written so clearly to be like he was the equivalent of like in Sleepless in Seattle, that guy that like Meg Ryan is engaged to, that you know is all wrong for her, and you know you're waiting for her to meet Tom Hanks. I mean, they just wrote him to just be the most irritating douche on earth.
I feel like General Hospital had an opportunity to do like an As the World Turns Simon with this character, and then miscast it and wrote a crappy character. Because if this had been like a Simon from As the World Turns, that could have been a hot triangle between Nathan, him, and Maxie. But it wasn't. The casting wasn't great. The storyline has been questionable, and it just didn't work. But if they had done it like Simon on As the World Turns, it would have been a fun storyline. Mike, what do you think?
I kind of felt like through the whole thing, he wasn't a likable character. There was nothing that I liked about him. So I didn't care. I didn't care. And it wasn't like Maxie. Maxie would not have gravitated. I get where Maxie had a big change in her life and she might try something different. But ultimately, I never really bought that Maxie would think this guy is the way to go.
And I didn't like him.
So
Sarah talked about how it didn't seem like, you know, she didn't see the clue. I felt like the clues were there from the beginning. Like the moment he saw Felicia in her QVC collection Aztec wear, it's like he got a boner. I always felt like very early on they kind of showed that, you know, because why would some boy from Australia, you know, just when Felicia's like, yeah, these are my Aztec jewels from my Mima, and he's like, oh really, blimey, you know, it's like he just got all beside himself almost immediately. So I kind of felt like he always was meant to be, you know, a kind of mustache twirling villain. I didn't think he would turn out to be, you know, the next text message killer. You know, I didn't think he was going to become that kind of, I thought he was going to be, you know, a grifter, a Keith Timmons from Santa Barbara. Do y'all drinking game in the audience anytime I mention Santa Barbara, another world.
Now we're up to three shots.
I thought he was going to be a con. I didn't think he was going to be, you know, this is how we foiled you and your little dog too. And, you know, with the Felix bot henchman that he had, you know.
And I swear I've seen that actor somewhere before who played like the immigration guy, and I know I've seen him somewhere, but I can never pin where it is. It drives me insane. Let's talk about Robin Scorpio, because Patrick had reason to be upset after discovering that his wife is actually close by and working on saving Jason, and in the meantime, the stone cold one on Stasis at least woke up for a short time. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think we all knew Jason was going to be alive. And I know there's the problem is, yes, this is a campy storyline. There's no way Jason can turn out to not be dead in a non-campy way, given what's been established. I mean, yeah, we never saw the body, so I suppose we could have planned he swam to South America or something. But, you know, it is in keeping with Cassadine history, which was campy as hell. And, I mean, it makes Robin look terrible because she is not, you know, telling Patrick the truth. That said, if we're going to see Patrick move on, since Kimberly McCulloch isn't going to be back with the show full time because she wants to pursue her directing interest, there has to be a way to break the two of them up, so else Patrick isn't, you know, this terrible guy who's like two-timing poor Robin. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where you're like, Patrick should hate Robin right now. I mean, we all, you know, think we know who Jason's going to turn out to be, and we'll see how long it takes for it to happen on camera. And, you know, I am a little curious to know exactly what Victor wants to do with Jason, because it's like, well, he was already a killer. What else?
They're going to put a computer chip in his head so that he can actually think properly, since his processing prior to being in stasis
wasn't that hot. Days of Our Lives?
I know, right?
Jeez. Is he John Black?
Pretty much. Let's talk about John Black. Jamie, you pointed out in your column that...
Oh, no, I'm not going to let you switch before I get to talk about that's the biggest story going on. And I am loving it! I think it is a hoot. Kimberly McCullough is finally watchable. I couldn't stand Robin nagging Carly, nagging Patrick with that clipboard, running around, bossing people around. Nying, 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 Patrick. Why'd you sleep with Lisa? Nying, 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 nying. Just nagging everybody. I get postpartum. Nying, nying, nying. That's my excuse, but everybody else better be good. Nying, nying, nying. She just used to drive me insane. Now she's like her mama.
I was never to be a Scrubs fan, ever. So I didn't care about Patrick and Robin.
Scrubs reeked of Brian Franzian. Well, Grey's Anatomy has McRaunchy or whatever, steamy. So we're going to have us one. But No, Robin, to me, this time she's a little more humanized, because when she left the last time and it was like, I'm choosing to go save Jason, I was like, oh, I kind of understand why, you know, I get that, you know, that would be the one thing that would make her do that. But I felt Patrick a lot more last time. And of course, I still get his anger because he doesn't know. But Robin knows that Victor tried to kill Patrick, Emma, and did manage to kill the little piñata. So Robin knows that if she doesn't finish thawing out those cutlets, he's going to kill her loved one. So to me, this kind of humanizes her and makes for the chance that if and when Kimberly ever decides that she can direct and do soaps at the same time, that she can come back and be like, but he was going to kill y'all if I didn't do what he said, if I didn't defrost those chicken cutlets. You know, he was going to kill y'all. So I kind of feel like she could have a viable out now, because if she explains to Patrick, you know that time when your baby got killed? It was because of Victor Cassidy. He said if I didn't do what he said. So I kind of felt like, I don't know. To me, I think as much as I enjoy her in this, you know, superhero mode kind of, I feel like, and this is to a larger extent with several soap characters, I think they have to have that Bill Bell moment where he decided, you know, after Jamie Lynn Bauer said, you know, that she was leaving Y&R, and Bill Bell basically, that's when he made the decision, okay, I've had to recast too many Fosters and Brooks, I'm just going to redo this show. And I'm not saying I want to think that people should do that, but I do think with certain characters, you just have to just take the bite and just let the fans be mad and tell a new story with Patrick. Let them be upset, because right. Robin just has to kind of go at this point. I feel the same way. I'm going to be real with Billy Abbott on The Young and the Restless. I feel the character just needs to be rested because there's too many recasts. And at a certain point, it's just time to say, let's just send them to Europe for 6 months, because you can't keep, you know, and of course they're not recasting Robin, but my thing is either recast her or let her go. Go see what Soleil Moon Frye is doing these days, or let it go. Just let Robin go, because it does kind of prevent things from, you know, progressing forward. I mean, I miss the days when, I mean, in the old days, who didn't know Hope was alive out there somewhere? And I was the biggest Boat fan in the world, but I had no problem loving Bo and Carly and loving Bo and Billy, even though Hope was presumed dead. And when Cass came back from his honeymoon on Another World, do your drinking game again, you know, without Kathleen, you know, and he was like, everybody's like, well, where's Kathleen? And he's like, oh, she died. Now, if I was one of the McKinnons, I would have called Nancy Grace and asked Cass some questions. But, you know, we allowed him to move on with Nicole and Frankie and other people before Kathleen's eventual return from the dead. Nowadays, I think these shows are so scared of fans. I'm like, who cares if they get mad? You have to keep telling the story. I mean, I like Patrick and Sabrina. Haters to the left.
No, I do too. I don't lovers just like to the right. No, I'm the same way. I never.
But Jason,
I'm going to say this.
Oh, go ahead.
I never hated Sabrina.
I don't care if you hated her. I can hate her enough for all of us combined.
I hated her.
With that, we're moving to Days of Our Lives, because we're running long on General Hospital.
Disney missed an opportunity, though. Let me say this, and I'm done. Disney missed the opportunity to do a great tie-in. They're doing all this synergy with Once Upon a Time, Frozen and everything. Forget Robin. The red-headed savior of Jason should have been Ariel. They could have been Jason under the sea. And she could have been singing about...
And then we would have had Lucky's Lucky Charm Girl.
Be part of Mob World.
Okay, Mike. This last week, Sammy found out about Will's betrayal on Days of Our Lives. And when she confronted him and they had it out, at first I was like, Sammy, you're not going hard enough on your son. But the way it ended on Friday's episode where she just lit into him... Loved it. What'd you think?
Well, I loved it too, but I knew when that woman was, the editor, was questioning her, you know, I knew she was going to say that Abigail was the young woman who was having an affair. But, you know, it's, look in the mirror. Will is turning into Sammy. maybe a little bit.
See, I don't know
but
about
he's
that.
Not, he's just not like... good enough to do it. He thinks he's Sammy, but he's not. Because he said he wanted...
Basically, he's Lucas.
Right, but he wanted to teach her a lesson. And the truth is, in all the years that anybody's ever told her, I'm going to teach you a lesson, it's never really worked out very well. So,
and she usually gets the final word.
Exactly. So and she got the final word, which is awesome. And, it's Daze is – okay, here's how I feel about Daze right now. And you know that I've tried to get into the show a lot over the years. Daze is – I can't watch Daze before I watch other stuff because if I watch Daze first, everything else is shit. So
I can say that. I don't go to that extreme.
I wouldn't go that far. No. There are storylines I like on Daze, but there are other storylines that I do not. Sarah, what did you think of Sam?
Well, first of all, you know, I have been ranting about my you know, what a little asshole Will is going to be being all week. Because who, if it's between your mother and your cousin, who sides with your cousin unless, like, your mother is, like, you know, been beating the hell out of you or something? It's just, like, it, you know, like, this, especially because we have seen on camera that Abby was chasing after EJ, basically, you know, at times blackmailing him for some dick, rather than, you know, being this poor little flower who he, you know, forced to do to have sex in a shower with him.
No, I have never bought that Abby was innocent, ever. But I think it's not out of the ordinary that people would think she was the innocent in this whole thing. But I don't buy
that's
that.
Because Hortons are perfect.
Exactly. Like Jennifer. Well, yeah, as Anne reminds me every day that Jennifer is a perfect Horton.
Well, the town didn't think Nick was a perfect Horton. That the whole, you know, that whole the Hortons are that they are the core family of the show, but they were never Ma and Pa were the only ones who had any morals. Everybody
right.
else was sleeping with their brothers.
And also what gets me is how what an idiot Will is, because let's just say they published his story as written. They didn't name Abby's name. Wouldn't every other journalist in the area immediately be like, who is this other woman, and get to uncovering it like happens
exactly.
in real-life sex scandals all the time? Does Will not know the first thing about the industry he's choosing to pursue?
Obviously he doesn't.
And it doesn't.
Since he used anonymous recordings, I'm like, what type of lawsuit is this little fool trying to get?
I know, there's a lot of things wrong with that.
This is Lucas and Sammy's son, and he doesn't even meet their most botched plot.
But I will say this, I mean, this is the same town where I believe that Sammy managed to become the CEO of Demera Enterprises when her resume basically says world's longest volunteering candy striper. So, I mean, can you imagine if Rupert Murdoch was flying over the U.S. and couldn't get back? No, well, his company isn't based in the U.S. Bad example. If Donald Trump...
Actually, it is. It's traded on the stock exchange now. They changed the designation.
Oh, well, okay. Well, thank you, Warren Buffett. I thought he was based in Britain or somewhere. But anyway...
Buffett or Murdoch? Well, Murdoch, they changed the stock.
Either one. If Warren Buffett couldn't run Berkshire Hathaway for a minute, if they decided to put his daughter-in-law, Boopsie Jones, up as CEO, the board of directors is going to have a little more. But, you know, we buy all that.
Because Sharon took over Newman on Y&R.
That's what I'm going to say. We buy all of that.
Buy it.
It's great. And if you have a woman come in, as long as her hair is looking on point and she has a sexy business suit on.
She wears a hat.
Yes, I do miss the hats, you know. We'll buy it because...
If you're a diva about to take over a corporation on soaps, you better be wearing a hat when you make the entrance.
And a fur.
Well, Sammy and Kate didn't have on hats, but they were texting each other, you know, cussing each other out, which I thought, okay, these board members should be looking at them like, you're trying to take over this company and you're not even paying attention to this meeting. But
Sammy and Kate, I feel, is like the fulfillment of decades of story where these two rivals are coming together before Sammy rides
it's
off. And I'm loving
it's
it.
It's brilliant. I do wish, as much as I do wish someone in town would tell Jennifer, your daughter is a hoe, you know, I get it, because it's always been Sammy against the world. And it's kind of a situation where you can't really come back from trying to sell your baby sister on the black market. It's like, Sammy is the girl that cried wolf because she sold Belle on the black market. Everything since then, people are ready to go, Sammy, like, I thought about, like, Eric. I mean, Greg Vaughn fits in so perfectly because when she's calling Nicole a baby-stealing slut, he screams at her, Sammy. And I'm like, she did steal the woman's baby, Eric. I know her. You like her vajayjay, but she did steal your sister's baby. It's like, she gets to have that anger. Everyone always tries, and that's me and my family. Ever since I was a little kid, people would say, Jamie, whenever I would get mad. Sammy is entitled to her anger. The Sammys of the world deserve our anger. Sorry.
Yeah, but well, she can't mess with Nicole, Jamie.
If Nicole don't get a haircut change and stops changing her haircut every week, like Carol Brady, she, you know, I have to say,
God, they've lobotomized Nicole. I feel like such a dish rag.
I feel like Nicole is what Carly was like on As the World Turns, where she was that person that you were like, no, Nicole, don't do that, don't do that. You know what's wrong. And then you had to wait for the whole secret to come out. Does that make sense? It was like... She's like Carly in that I root for her. I want her to do okay. And then she just makes the wrong choice, and then she just has to sit with it.
One thing, though, I would say
that the difference is that Carly on As the World Turns was written more compelling.
One thing that is today's of our lives detriment, and Days to me is the best show right now, but one thing that I do feel it kind of could use some fleshing out on is, and you know, Mike, you kind of spoke to that, but it's like with Nicole and Sammy, they have the same energy. Mm-hmm. You know, they're definitely different women, but Days has a lot of the same archetype. Sammy, Kristen goes above and beyond, yeah. But Sammy,
Lisa.
Yeah, they're all just bitches. The Days has such a surplus of super bitches that it's almost like Battle of the Bitches, and there aren't any real true young adult heroines, because Abby to me is not a heroine. I loved Abby sleeping with EJ, but Abby's not a heroine. Abby's hoish, and Jennifer's a heroine, but she can't be the ingenue at 50. There's really no young.
I mean, well, but there's Chrishell Stouse's
they're
character.
Trying to develop that. I really wish they'd have made her.
It's a really long development, though.
I think that they are trying to make her that tortured heroine, but really that's the same template that Nicole and her brother came in on, and Billy and Austin came in on. You know, the pretty girl comes to town, gets involved with the cop, and then lo and behold, she had a pervy, nasty daddy, and she has a hunky brother that everybody wants to screw. I mean, they've done that ever since Lisa Rinna. And, you know, I mean, and it's worked for them, but, you know, Chrishell, I feel like if they put her with Lucas, it would work better, because Rafe to me is still a satellite character. So
Rafe is boring, too.
Yeah.
He's not
boring. He's only like interesting with Kate.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
When I watch Days, Rafe and Jordan are the weakest points for me, but they're building slowly some story, but it's been very slow.
And that's part of Days' problem, is that a lot of these stories take too long to build.
Well,
I mean, they end up having a good payoff.
Yes.
But you lose interest partway through, and so then you tune back in when you see the promo for the payoff.
I feel like Days is that show that if nothing happens without a reason, it might be boring, but if you're not paying attention, it's going to happen. Something, there's a reason why this conversation is happening. There's a reason why this is going on. It may not come out, and you may think it's boring right now, but 3 or 6 months from now, like, all those people that showed up at the police station when Kristen was brought in.
Brilliant.
The biggest surprise for me was that Daniel's able to actually get her into the police station.
Let's talk about that.
John Black, superstar, couldn't track her down and bring her to justice, but Daniel Jonas, armed with
Dr. Harry Chess.
armed with his tongue depressor and his stethoscope. No support from the ISA. No support from Shane Donovan. No radio in of a helicopter from Abe Carver managed to do what John Black couldn't do.
I thought they were going to have sex in the back of that truck, actually.
Days of Our Lives pimping one of their worst characters.
No character that I can recall has ever been pimped. I mean, I'm going to have to go back to, like, 80s cricket on Young and the Restless to see a character get propped and pimped like Daniel Jonas.
It's almost as if Days of Our Lives is, I mean, he must have, like, blackmail material on the executive of Days of Our Lives, because that's the only
thing. No, don't even say that as a joke. Somebody will be in a copy. Daytime Confidential says, no, he tests well. From what I've heard, and I will say this, because I have been at those fan events, and I like Daniel with the right character. I like him with Eve. I like him with Nicole. But I will say this. I've been to those Days fan events. You really have to go to those events to see, to get out of our little podcast bubble of what we like and what we don't like. Now, if James Scott is there, it's shut down. You know, look, everybody and their mama is lined up for him. But if he is not there, those women line up around the corner for Sean Christian. They love him. Now, they get in. Now, this is what's so funny. And the poor guy, because they, you know, those fan events, they really are, you really have to go to them. I think every soap journalist should go to at least one, because you really get to see the people interact with their fan base. And every fan event that I've gone to where Sean Christian is at, he spends the entire event defending Dannifer, because all those women are like, we hate you with Jennifer! And he's like, I know. You know, the poor guy is like, look, I'm just trying to cash a check. But, you know, I mean, so, yeah,
I like Daniel and I like Jennifer, but I don't like them together.
Right. I like the Jennifer I grew up with, the spunky, feisty, you know, what she becomes whenever Anne Milbauer is given her grief, or Eve. That's the Jennifer I know and love. With Daniel, the thing of it is, for me, they're not happy together. And my thing is, I believe there's a trajectory to romantic life. You, angst is for children. JJ and Paige should be having all this angst and, you know, I want to believe
it's that. An angst to watch JJ and Paige.
Well, they're growing on me because of the family dynamic.
I don't think that Luke at all.
Yeah. I didn't.
I'm not a fan of that, of Paige, the character.
I want to believe that by the time I'm 40, whatever, that I'm not, oh my God, we need to be together, Bubby. Why can't we? I do trust you. Jennifer already went through all of them changes when she was 25. Why at 45 is she still having to go through changes?
It doesn't take that much work to have a relationship, to be honest with you.
Not at the age she's at. It ought to be like, look, Daniel, you know, I inherited my grandmama's crib. You got your little duplex, you know, you want to come over and screw, I'll make you some donuts, I'll have JJ put a little weed in it, you know. You know, but we ain't got to go through all these changes with each other. Jennifer is always frowning about Daniel. I just want to take you home and put some calamine lotion on those cuts. Like, literally, she begged him to go home, and because he was all cut up and everything by Kristen. And Jennifer is crying and begging him to take him back. You know, I just want to take you home and take care of you. I want to run a bath for you and put some isopropyl alcohol in it. And I want to just, you know, if you have to use the bathroom, I want to get you some Desitin. I just want to take it. He's like, no, Jennifer. You didn't believe in me, Jennifer. Ooh, angst. We are angsty.
Sounds a little bit like the angst on The Bold and the Beautiful, where we had Hope, Wyatt, Liam, and one of the most depressingly boring triangles on soaps today.
Well, here's the deal. It's really a shame that Wyatt and Liam are brothers, because if there are three characters on a soap who should be having a three-way, it is these three. Because they're so interchangeable to each other that, you know, Hope seems to feel absolutely identical to two of them, about both of them. It's just whichever one shows up at the appointed time is the one she's going to be with.
I'm pretty sure she got out a ruler, measured dick sizes, discovered they were the same length, and then checked to make sure they had identical birthmarks. That's how freaking sucky this storyline is.
I think Scott Clifton would have a bit... Oh, I'm sorry. we have to get back on point. But it's always the ones you don't expect, though. You would expect it would be Darren because he's taller and whatever. It's always that weird, quirky guy that has a lumberjack in his pants.
Oh, for the love of God.
Well, you started it. You know I can't resist. But then neither
we
can...
We know you can't resist.
And neither can Hope. You know, I'm like... There, I have watched some silly marital sequences on soaps over the years of people getting married, you know, in a like, you know, clink, boom, Brenda got married in a moment of haste, you know, with Jax, you know, because she'd been begging Sonny to do right and leave Lily, and so she decides to marry, you know, and that was, you know, but it was better written.
Let me ask you a question. Was that based in a story? Rather
it
than
was.
Something that happened in a week, in 5 days.
And that's the thing about B&B. A wedding means nothing anymore. And it really, I really wish the storytelling could match the location and the budget, because I give them so many props for still being able in 2014 to do location shoots and to be so lush and so glamorous. But it's like...
But wouldn't it be great if they meant something?
Yeah, it's like they get a map out. Rather than write out a long story, it's like they get out a map of the world and go, let's see, how about Istanbul? Okay, now we have to come up with three characters. Whoever... Okay, so... Eric is going to decide he loves Brooke on Monday. On Tuesday, she's going to run off to Istanbul with Ridge to promote, you know, Faith for Yesterday's launch of its new piggy ring that's going to save the company. But Wednesday, we're going to have Deacon show up, and he is going to... Then Quinn is going to come in on a motorcycle and knock Donna into the Valley of Istanbul. I wasn't paying attention in geography, so I'm making these places up. And so then Brooke decides, I'm going to marry Crystal Chappell. I mean, that's what we get. It's like, I love B&B. I love Brad. But they've got to tell more substantive stories. You know, that silly-ass girl jumping off in that damn water. If I was the people on that yacht, I'd have left their silly asses in that water and told Bill they drowned because they jumped their silly asses in the water like that. And then it's like, we're married? I don't believe it, because the last three or four times on B&B, they forgot to file the marriage licenses, you know? One time with Liam and Hope, they forgot to file the
weddings
marriage.
Are meaningless on B&B. Absolutely,
it's
meaningless.
It's silly and it's interchangeable. If it's not Brooke getting married somewhere overseas, it's Hope getting married somewhere overseas. It's not. It's just. And Forrester Creations and Spencer Publications, I'm so glad they still use those sets, but there's no stories there anymore. The entire staff of Forrester Creations
stands in Eric's office
and gossips. They all just sit around gossiping in that alley. You know, she masturbates to Hope's picture. Yes. I know she does. Hope is so pure. She's so beautiful. She's so wonderful.
And I really wish they actually made Hope in some way special or pure, because she just seems like some random person who's, like, going back and forth between two guys. I mean, her inspirational story of being, you know, super rich and handed a fashion line when she never even went to college is not particularly, like, you know, an inspirational role model story. Like, you know, a role model for young girls is, like, I don't know, Monet Davis, who's, like, the first girl to, like, pitch a no-hitter at the Little League World Series. That's a role model for young girls to look up to.
Listen.
She's the model.
Bold and the Beautiful does not require intelligence
to
watch.
She was the only model there. She's the model, and she's the designer, and
well, you know that Brooke used to be the model, too, and the CEO.
No,
and,
I don't...
You know, we've never seen Donatella Versace. Well, no. We've never seen her, you know, doing the runway show. But, you know, and as long as it's rooted in a more, you know, a story. It doesn't even have to be a believable story, but tell me a story, you know.
Well, my thing, too, is the flip-flopping. Like, Quinn came on a certain way, and then Allie came on a certain way, and then I turned it on a Monday. She was psychotic, and the whole family knew something was going on, but they didn't talk about it. And then Oliver, after years of psychiatric help, Allie could not figure out what was wrong with her, but Oliver did. He just put them together. Taylor and Allie, and everything was fine. And now she's back to that girl that came on the show 6 months or a year ago.
If she sees Wyatt in those halls, like, she's fine until she sees Wyatt. I want them to find out that Wyatt and Quinn, like, did identity theft on Thorne or something.
Well, speaking of identity theft.
My favorite character on that show is the Darla bubble.
That girl acts like Wyatt wrote some hot checks on her. You know, she'll be like, "Hi, Oliver, I love you. Let's go to don't they be going to Chuck E. Cheese all the time?"
Oh, they go to the
medieval times.
Yeah,
somewhere jumping in the bubbles. But then when she see Wyatt coming in the halls, "Oh yes, I want to go to medieval world with you." Then she see Wyatt. "What are you doing here? Get your ass out of here, motherfucker."
Quinn is the same way. There's no middle ground on that show. And you watch 5 days of this and then 5 days of that and 5 days of that. There's no consistency or reading of the stories together to make them.
There's no story. Yes. There's no story. They are photocopying Ridge and Brooke storylines and changing the names out and then removing what little good parts of that story was.
And I don't like
and all
Ridge.
You have left is a shell, and that's the Wyatt Lee.
I don't like Ridge.
Story.
I'm going to put it out there. I don't like this Ridge. I didn't like him before, and I don't like him now.
You're not the only one, because Ron Moss got him in the trail.
I don't like him now. Yeah.
Look, Ron Moss. "Hello, Mike. My name is Ron Moss, and the clock stopped at 8:08 on this podcast so that I can tell you that you are going to get a very special 30th anniversary player CD and DVD collection, and I might even swap with your mate if you want me to and show up shirtless and give them my special, what do you call it, Ronachino.
Sarah, do you think it was a betrayal for B&B to cast Torsten K as Ridge?
I think that if you quit a job in any field and that job and the head of the company deems that that job needs to be filled, they can hire whoever they want to replace you. You quit.
That was a betrayal, Sarah. What do you know?
And it's just like, you know, like, I am... You know, I don't particularly want to see another Sammy on Days of Our Lives because I can't envision anyone but Allison Sweeney doing it. However,
as Sammy.
However, if they deem that, you know, I have been proven wrong by many characters that I did not believe could be recast who were eventually successfully recast. And, you know, is there anyone Ron would have found satisfactory, or is it like something personal with Torsten, or does he just feel like he should get the stomp out of the building and then the role should be held in case he ever feels like coming back? I mean, I'm just not quite clear on what he was hoping for.
I like Torsten, but I do want his story to be better.
Listen, there's never been a more disheveled Ridge. For a
who
first
cares?
Person,
hey, Ridge!
No,
designer,
the
man
character.
Can't get a suit that fits.
Ridge,
I don't know if it
looks and acts like he wants to penetrate the female population of Beverly Hills now, as opposed to wearing their scarf collections. I like Torsten's Ridge.
How you feel about him is dependent on how you felt about Ron Moss. Like, to me, that was a character that just always kind of made me giggle, and I couldn't believe all these women were just fighting over him. And I guess it's more like, I guess Thorsten would be more, quote-unquote, my type than Ron Moss was. But I also respect that for some other people, for a lot of fans, it was the opposite, and he's just too different from them. I mean...
Yeah, I just think he's playing Zack Slater 2.0. That's
well, a
my
lot
opinion.
Of soap stars do that. But, you know, I feel... that, okay, because I was a fan of Ridge circa 88-ish, because I didn't start right at the beginning with BNB. I started about 88, 89. I was a fan from that point on up until, really, I'm going to say the Ridge. I stayed true, because, you know, I was a ride-or-die Ridge and Brooke fan, probably through Ridge, Jack Wagner's character, Nick, Ridge, Nick, and Brooke. And, you know, when Ridge started raping folks, and really, I'm going to be honest, when they had Ridge and Brooke had that one tacky wedding they had down in the jungle somewhere, right. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, wasn't that when Sheila was the running a militia? It's like, Brad, you know, it's so funny. Ron catches all of the campy over-the-top, you know, criticism. But, you know, Brad can go off the rails, too, from time to time. But my thing is now I'd like to see some off the rails. You know, and he does kind of have fun with Quinn. I just think he needs to do more Quinn and Deacon, more Katie. I need more Katie being stank nasty to Brooke. I need some conflict. I need Katie working at Forrest. You know, I need Brooke to show up at work and Katie to spin around in her desk. Hello, Brooke. Ridge has hired me to do PR here. What are you doing here, Katie? You're just trying to face you weaseled in on my destiny. And now, well, there you go. There's that single tear coming out of your eye. I lost my heart. You have Stormy's heart. Shut up, bitch. I hate you. I miss that. You know, I miss that.
Well, I need Katie to
Jamie.
Be like that with Ridge. I mean, Ridge was sitting there talking about how Brooke shouldn't marry Bill. She shouldn't do all this stuff. And Katie's just sitting there, and I thought, speak up. You need to speak up and say, why do you care about her? You just stay away from her.
You know what I mean? When your dude flies to the Arab Emirates to break up somebody else's marriage, he's just not that into you. That's Berber giving Carrie Bradshaw a breakup notice on a post-it note. I'm like, I'm sorry, Katie. He's just not that into you.
Well, it turns out YNR isn't that into Michael Muni. He tweeted this last week that he got an official call.
Wait, Luke. Brilliant.
What? I thought it was a good segue.
I'm serious. No, that was all. That was. See, I'm so. I do satire so much. You don't know when I'm for real. No, that was good.
Michael Muni tweeted that he just got an official call. Although things got very close, I will not be returning to YNR. That part of my life is over. Moving on. Meanwhile, Daytime Confidential sources are denying that there were ever negotiations between YNR and the actor. Jamie?
Yes. That, well, the show. You know, we ain't got to go. We ain't got to go round about the mulberry bush. You know, he's saying. What did he say? Nah. I don't even remember.
Although things got very close, I will not be returning to YNR. Just got the official call.
Now, what was the last part you said?
That part of my life is over, moving
on. Well, for YNR, from what they're saying, that part of their life been over. So, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, look, we present both sides. The man tweeted that he was so close to coming back, you could taste it. And YNR is like, say you were. No, you wasn't. We ain't even gave you no visitors pass to get on Television City. So, I mean, my thing is with Muni is one of my favorite actors. I think he's a brilliant actor, but I think he showed his ass on the set of that show. But in his defense, that show has more ass showers than manhub.com. But, you know, because, I mean, that's...
This podcast is not sponsored by Manhub.
I wish it was, because, look, I need a check. We will be, though, if Manhub wants to sponsor us. But anyway, back to that. It's like, you know, I defend Muni because I'm like, well, that per capita, Genoa City has more shower outers than any other show probably in the history of television. Brenda Dixon, Victoria Ryle, Eric Braden. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to use my head as a weapon against you. I mean, this show has had plenty before him, but maybe this regime is just like, uh-uh. It is not 1985. You know, we are not getting 12 million viewers, so ain't nobody got time for that, so we don't have time for that. But as a fan, I wish he was back, because I do think he was brilliant as Adam. And I'm just, with the Billy situation, does not make me rest easy. You know, I'm going to be sleeping with one eye open until they cast this role, because I'm like, yeah. I mean, they've had some casting issues, but...
Well, speaking of casting...
That being said, I mean, it's over. I wish Muni and Victoria Ryle, too, I'm going to just say this, would just move on with your life. Get on with your life. Go do something else. Damn. I mean, I supported Victoria Ryle for years. It's like, enough. It has been said. We did that podcast 7 years ago. Stop tweeting about that story and go book an audition. Get on with your life. There are more television shows. Sherry Saab is 1/10 of the actress Victoria Ryle is. And she on a hit show on the ABC Family. Quit worrying about Younger Than Damn, Restless, and go audition some damn where. We know television ain't always cool with black folks, and I'm not, you know, it's just the way it is, but move on with your life. Get on with your life. Let go and let God.
Mike, Phyllis is about to move on with her life. We got to see Gina Tognoni.
I just saw her, like, I didn't even see her eyes open. And I watched, like, did I miss that?
I don't think so.
No, okay. I think she did as good a job as anyone could do of lying still in bed.
For a coma.
Luke well, no,
brilliant, Sarah, brilliant, brilliant as always, Gina.
Luke caught hell for doing his first impressions column.
Well, here's the thing about first impressions.
No, that's the record show. I have told Luke over the years, don't you think you should wait? And he'll tell me, I have always done first impressions.
Listen, when it comes to first impressions, usually I do it within 2 days of the person going up. If it goes longer, people complain because
she did a hell of a job then.
And if it's any quicker, they complain because it's too early. You can't win for Lucy. You might as well publish it when you want. Sarah, what did you think?
Like I said, I think she did as good a job of lying there with her eyes closed as anybody could possibly do. I'm looking forward to seeing her take on the role. She, you know, I mean, it's going to be... How do I put this? You know, I think she's going to be bring a very different quality to the role of Phyllis, but we all know she's a great actress. Yes. I'm hoping she will prove to have chemistry with both Nick and Jack. We can't tell that because they haven't worked together yet. So, you know, we know she can be a bitch.
I think she'll
we know she can be sexy.
Yeah.
I love her. Jamie, I mean, there's...
what did you think of Neil getting the shock of his life this week?
I am loving that storyline.
Best story on YNR.
My God.
It is the best story on YNR, you're right.
It is so classic soap. Yep. I do have to wonder, you know, because I'm getting older, I'm 37, so, you know, when I see somebody who's 20 and, you know, just starting out or whatever, I get this, like, melancholy moment. It's like, I'm now getting at the age where my soap people that I grew up watching, I've watched them transition from the young story to the 20 and 30 something story to now, like Christoph, when I started watching him, he was the teen hunk on Generations. And then he was the young 20 something on YNR. And now he's the patriarch. He's Mac Corey. I mean, he's Mac Corey caught between Rachel and Iris, which I'm like, he's the very sexy Mac Corey, you know. You know, patriarchs aren't what they used to be. I mean, patriarchs go to the gym in 2014, but it's just so kind of weird to remember, you know, Neil, you know, jabbing with Drew in the break room at Jabot, and now he's the cuckolded, I mean, he's Jod Abbott. Forget it. Let's go to their show. He's Jod Abbott waiting for somebody to send him a puzzle with, you know, Devon banging his wife. I love it. It's so classic soap. I love it.
This is what I want. I want Neil to, like, fake that he's blind. I want him to get his sight back, catch something that's going on in the room, and then just fake that he's blind. That's what I want.
I would love that. Like, he gets better. He doesn't tell them. And, right. You know, since it's 2014, he sees them together. They think, you know, they're safe. He can't see us. He gets out his cell phone, films them, and then, you know, starts, you know, wreaking havoc with it.
And then he's the Genoa City blogger.
Y'all know.
G-Tube. It's G-Tube.
It's time for YNR to start thinking about that next Emmy. So, hide your corneas, everybody in Genoa City.
But there isn't a baby to kill off this time. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Well, it is the only storyline on YNR that is just really engaging me, and I first of all, I want to praise Michelle Morgan and the casting director who hired her for finally finding an African-American actress who could sort of do, in a different way, mind you, let me stress this so no one will get angry at me, what Victoria Rowell did and just be super compelling on screen and where you just want to watch her. I mean, she's beautiful, she's got that it factor, and, you know, I'm glad they did it the way they did, where she married the safe, dependable guy, and then, you know, didn't realize, oh, wait, I want this, like, 24-year-old billionaire. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, for real, nobody would even have thought of Neil in real life. They'd be like, wait, he's 25, he's fine, and he's a billionaire? Yep, I'm with that. But,
She's making Lily interesting.
Oh, she
oh God, yes.
That has taken a decade to do.
They need to write into that with everything they can. Mm-hmm. Forget Lily as the happy mother of Winnie and Nelson. She needs to become a scheming, malicious, I'm going to destroy you super mm-hmm. bitch. They need to ramp it up beyond just the snarking and throwing water. She should be hiring, well, they don't have a PI because Paul Williams got promoted to PI, the police chief, but they need to have.
She can hire Kevin.
She needs to hire. They need to bring back Thad Luckinbill and have her. She needs to hire JT and be like, I need you to find out everything you can on her. And just, you know, even use that Mason. She needs to be doing whatever she can. This is the moment, like when Jill brought on David Kimball to, you know, try to get Dina's fortune back. Lily has to become proactive in trying to get this woman out because she's great at that. I want to see Crystal Khalil be the biracial Victoria Wyndham. I want to see her be, you know, this young super bitch.
And then she could go
or
after
more, not Vicky Wyndham, biracial Beverly McKenzie, and just do whatever she can to try to destroy
them. And to her credit, she's doing a bang-up job. I love watching Lily.
And
they've wasted her all these years as this sort of milquetoast character when she had this in her all along.
And
isn't that a testament to a lot of podcasts back
in
the day?
It's also like Arianne Zucker. Remember, Sarah, when Nicole was a heroine? Eric, I want you to take a pretty picture of me. My daddy put me in porn. And the moment they had her marry Lucas for money for that $5 million and made her a bitch, we've loved her ever since. I mean, sometimes people don't, you know, the saccharine, and they need to, and Kane needs to become annoyed with Lily. Kane should be like, I haven't had a blowjob in weeks because you're so obsessed with your father's marriage. I mean, they need to have some tension there too, you know.
And, oh, you mean that's not happening?
maybe Lily just wants some of Hillary's kitty chow.
No, I don't think she wants that. I think she might try to burn it.
I do have a question, though, since we're talking about The Young and the Restless. What do you think about Nikki going back to drinking?
That's always good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good stuff, too, but I think she's very, it just makes her weak. She's so weak, I can't take, it's very hard to watch her, and I love her.
I wish it had been motivated differently, because I just don't see why this thing with Ian would be such a big deal. The whole damn town knows she took her clothes off for money, and she's embarrassed about being victimized for, I mean, this thing that no one would have anything but sympathy for her for. Like, she was basically a rape victim, and the idea that it was somehow scandalous that, like, while she was pregnant in her 20s, in a cult, by what she perceived as a rapist, she wasn't like, yay, I can't wait to be a mommy! Like, that she had a thought, and then, especially when her actions were to make sure that the baby would be well taken care of, you know, she gave it to nuns, which on a soap means good things are going to happen to your baby. Dylan had a wonderful family. It was the most noble, unselfish way she could have handled it. You know, it's just
Nikki
ridiculous.
They had a book. Leanna Love published a book about all of their lives. I don't understand why she.
I can handle Nikki drinking because she's married to Victor because I can't stand him. And I would drink if I was with him too. But this whole thing about the Dylan and Paul and Ian, no, it just doesn't make sense.
This is the one character who was served better by Maria Irina Bell was Nikki. There's no denying that. Mm-hmm. She wrote Nikki badass. She did. She, you know, Nikki got her bite back. You know, Victor and Nikki became like this, you know, Scenes from a Marriage meets Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. You know, now it's, you know, and I haven't been on this podcast in 2 months, or it's been, maybe it's not been that long, but it seems like it. And I was complaining back then about Victor patting her on the head. Sit down, my baby. That's not MS, people. MS is more than, you know, look at what's going on. You know, we just found out with Robin Williams and Parkinson's disease, right, which is not the same thing. But, I mean, let's show the palpable struggle of someone with MS. MS is more than, oh, did that body and word upset you, my baby? Sit down, my baby. I mean, come up with a real story about her struggles and her trying to balance that out, or maybe her fears that Victoria, or, and I don't even know if it's hereditary or not, but maybe, you know, her fears that she could pass it on to her children, or
why children.
I mean, this show has always been huge about charity events and things like that. You know, yeah, she sets up a charity event and someone,
they should make Summer an alcoholic and have her, Nikki, help her with it.
I don't want that. I'm tired of alcoholics. Oh. That show has too many alcoholics and none of them are anonymous. They always talk about, well, this one is my sponsor. I'm like, I thought y'all was supposed to be anonymous. If I was a drunk, I wouldn't tell nobody in general.
Well, one thing that isn't anonymous is this podcast, which we have to wrap and bring to an end. We would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Sarah, where can they find you?
You can find me on @DeepSoap on Twitter. And or you can also read me on TV by the Numbers, and I'm occasionally freelancing for biography.com and writing for a web series, Fifi Cat Therapist, if you're into animation, on DreamWorks' new YouTube channel, DreamWorks TV. I have too many jobs.
Who you think you are, Allison Sweeney, with all the jobs?
I wish I had her paycheck.
Mike, where can people find you if they're not familiar with you, if they're newer listeners? Where can they find you on Twitter?
Oh, on Twitter I'm at MPJ24, but usually I'm down the bar down the street.
If they want to somehow put a tracking app on your phone so people can hunt you down, that's totally up to your discretion, and we take no liability for it. On that note, we
thank you. You ain't asked nobody where they can find me. They can find me on my Twitter account, which is Deep Soap.
No, it's not.
Deep. I find you. I can find you in Bay City. You don't fool anybody.
You can find me at Capwell Mansion. It says it on my Twitter profile.
Until next time, so long.
Bye.
Santana, clean that day.